Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, ahoy, and welcome to Always There, the Howard's Way podcast. I'm Julia Rayside. Thank you for joining me as I navigate through every single episode of the 1980s seafaring soap opera set in the fictional English coastal town of Tarrant. It would be a lonely voyage without you. And joining me today to discuss Series 3, Episode 6 is the writer and actor Paul Litchfield.
Hello.
Hello, darling. How are you?
I'm all right, my lovely. How are you?
Oh, you know, just glad to be in Tarrant and not out there where bad things are happening.
No, you've just taken me on a little tour of your office and it's amazing because you
it's
do
good,
technically
right?
live inside a ship.
I'm aiming to get there eventually. I need to get the whole thing like sort of, you know, planked.
Yeah, absolutely. And, planked.
I've got to get really planked. But I have got in the garden as well, which you haven't seen, I've got a full size life belt from an old, I ultimately would like a ship.
I've got a very galleon in my garden.
Right. I've just got the life belt from a real ship. And I got it from a garden centre that also sells old tat, and it stinks, like it really smells. So Joel wouldn't let me have it in the house, but it's in the garden. It looks lovely.
Oh,
a red
wow.
and white thing just propped up against one wall.
Because you've got a big thing of different sailors' knots on your wall, haven't you?
I do. I have the two hearts beat as one, the Spanish bowline, flat Turk's head. And the two-strand Matthew Walker.
Wow, they all sound like really weird sort of epitaphs on graves.
Yeah, they have worrying names. Jug Slingknot.
He was, as in life, a Jug Slingknot. It's brilliant. I love it.
Paul?
Yes.
Howard's Way.
I know.
We join the Tarantines.
The Tarantinos. We join the Tarantino clan at a funeral.
I know. I bet you didn't even know who was in the box.
No, so my first question was, who did and how did Do They Die do?
Good question. And the answer is, it's Mark Foster. He was a speedboat racer. He was being quietly cuckolded by Ken Masters. He was sleeping with his dull but very beautiful wife, Sarah.
Ken again.
Mm-hmm. And rather than say, you're having an affair, stop that now, he went and just crashed his boat into a buoy while they watched just to punish them.
So this accident he had, it was nothing to do with nefarious tamperings.
He deliberately committed suicide in front of his betrayer of a wife and his
Why
evil business
partner. Why do that? Why go all the way out at sea to do that?
Made great television. it blew up and everything. It was great.
Was it? Wow. Yeah. Also, they hit one of those exploding buoys.
That's right. You know, the ones they have now.
Yeah, the ones they have now with dynamite strapped to the... yeah, I know them. What I loved about this first scene is, as far as I could discern, Jan seems to be dressed like some sort of part-time barrister.
Yes.
It's amazing. She looks like she's just come from a small claims court.
I wouldn't put it past her to have another career on the side as well. She's a very ambitious lady.
She's and also Ken, looking very shifty. Now I know why. Thank you, Julia, for the context. But he looks really shifty, like he's just parked his Sinclair C5 in a disabled bay. Like he is. Come on, get the funeral over with. I don't want to get a ticket.
At the back. But obviously, Sarah is a beautiful widow in black. She looks very good in black.
She does, and she throws that lovely rose.
A bonus. Yeah. Probably like an Italian mafia widow. And then obviously coming out of the church, she walks past Ken, barely giving him a glance.
Yeah.
And just pointedly ignores him.
So how many women has now Ken bedded up until now?
Let's think. So there's poor Dawn,
poor Jan. Is everyone prefixed with poor?
Poor Sarah. Anyone who's been on the wrong end of Ken Masters is
Bankley.
No, it was just poor Dawn. So I think three that we know of, but okay. I can't imagine that's been, you know, the notches on his bedpost will be many more, I imagine.
Yes, I'd imagine. Because in Tarrant, they've all pretty much had it away with each other, haven't they? There's a small circle, really, of about 10 to 12 people that end up sleeping with each other, like some weird sexual pyramid scheme that they're doing.
It's for budgetary reasons we can't go into here. Anyway, then, so funeral, bad. Then we go to the yard.
Yes, and this is Jack and old salty Jack.
Yeah, and there's a pinstripe parasite in a suit going through the yard's assets, which really, as far as I can see, are a filing cabinet and a bottle of whiskey. They don't really own anything else.
That seems to be Jack's moniker, isn't it? Like hidden bottles of alcohol everywhere. I'd imagine he's got like miniature tequila bottles from hotels just tucked down his socks.
Definitely.
He's working with Tom. Is that something that's recent or has that always been the case?
Oh, what, Jack? Oh, yeah, Jack and Tom went into partnership in that business. Maybe it was just after you watched the episodes of the first series. But yes, so they've been in partnership through the good times and the bad.
Right.
Three series in now.
I know he's like supposed to be like a bluffed cove who just wears his heart on his sleeve. And he's very much the working man's blue collar sort of representation in Tarrant, isn't he? He's not the high-rolling, champagne-drinking. He's all, just say it as I see it, etc.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I kind of like him, but I reckon he's had some dodgy dealings in the past.
Well, I mean, he'd probably be the first to admit that. But now he's basically, the boatyard's always in some kind of financial trouble, just constantly.
Right. Is that because he's slush funding all the money off to like the local odd bins?
Yes, I mean, probably. That's definitely.
He looks
and
to
buying
me...
a lot of typewriters that don't work.
Yes. He looks
they never work.
He looks to me that is like someone who would willingly end up going down a local high street, closing down all the charity shops, and then somehow the next day they're all replaced with late night over 18 Tamagotchi shops.
Okay. You really think he's a proper, like, he's a dodgy dealer.
Seems dodgy.
That's more Ken's style, to be honest. Jack's straight down there. He just wants to build boats. He just wants to get on with his life and build boats. But obviously, that's always being made very difficult. My favourite line in this episode comes early in this scene where Bill, who is another salty sea dog who's just there to build boats and get on with his life, is trying to fix the latest broken typewriter in the office and says exasperatedly, "I build boats."
Well, that's what,
didn't know that.
I just thought it was some chap they had from, like, you know, daycare. It was just, shut up.
Oh, what was that?
That's my phone making science fiction noises, which I'll stop immediately.
Can you turn it off, please?
So
Paul.
Sorry, so unprofessional.
That's a really old fashioned ringtone now. That's from like 20 years
ago. It's a really old fashioned phone as well. I hate anything new because it means I have to learn something.
Oh, yeah, no, I understand that.
Nightmarish.
You're wooden boats. You're not these new plastic tubs, right?
No. I'm a wooden coracle kind of guy.
There you are, you see. You fit right in. So we leave the yard in disarray. Presumably they're looking to value it because it might be going into administration. Everything's very bad. Back at the high-tech university building.
Well, that's what that is.
A woman called Emma is looking closely at a miniature catamaran hull being tested for something, something or other.
Yes,
in a
water tank. It looks like they're dragging a clog through some water to check for aerodynamic drag or saline solution.
That's exactly
it. Wood grain. But it's supposed to be the hull of a ship. Right?
Or a clog. I like that
or
too.
Or a clog.
And Tom arrives to see what she's found. She's basically trying to prove that his design for a catamaran, what sunk, was not his fault. Like, his design was not at fault. They must have hit something. So they've been trying to prove this for, most of the series.
Okay. Well, they get very close by the end of this episode, don't they?
I know.
Wow.
But Tom arrives explaining, because she needs more of a deadline, that the bank manager he's going to see on Monday will probably tell him he has to repay his overdraft unless there's some great breakthrough in this case against him.
Basically, Tom's received a Dear John letter from his bank. So I'm leaving you. There's no future for us anymore. I'm seeing other customers. I'm so sorry. Tom's just like,
He goes to the bank a lot to be told no. And it's always like, he knows the answer's no. Then he goes to the bank. Then the bank manager says no. Then he comes out looking more sad than ever. But at no point do they ever actually just come and start taking his car and his telly and stuff. They just keep saying no. Then we go to Leo, who's being a very sexually inappropriate
with
someone he's teaching to Windsor.
And they're both dressed like the contestants from Arnold Schwarzenegger's The Running Man. Really bizarre what they're wearing.
He's in like that one piece of sleeveless wetsuit.
Very strange. And
so they've decided to make him sort of like a hunk this series.
No, Leo's Tom's son, is this right?
Yes, correct.
Because he looks like the product of sort of Aryan Hitler youth.
He is very Aryan.
He's very clipped as well, the way he speaks. He's got a really weird delivery.
It was the 80s.
He talks like he's a genuine lord. And like everyone else is just his subjects, just sort of slightly annoying him.
He does have a kingly bearing, you're correct.
Yeah,
about that.
And also, but
anyway,
I have to
he's
say, this
his
is
hands.
My, yeah, go on.
No, you go.
Well, I was about to say, there's some Nazi based activity running through this entire episode. I hope you're aware
right.
of this.
No.
Oh my God. That's the first example. Leo is probably a genetic creation for the Hitler Aryan youth.
Okay, that's fair.
Well, bed that in now. More evidence will be heading your way.
Leo just never stops taking abuse on this podcast. I'm really sorry.
Really?
Yes.
He is very wooden, I suppose.
Well, it's not so much that. I think it's just his character is very... His character doesn't have any power in any of the scenes he's in. So he's always on the back foot. He's always sort of... He's always bending over and taking it, basically.
Right.
And after a while, you just think, come on, Leo. But it's not his fault. He didn't write his own character. Anyway,
because
carry
he's
on.
Desperately in love with this lady, but he's not sure whether he's been taken for a ride or...
I think he's afraid of her.
I was slightly afraid of her. She's
yeah, no,
she's
you should
terrifying.
Be. She is terrifying. So go on. Why is he a Nazi?
Oh, he just looks like that generic look from 1980s movies when they go, and here is what we consider to be the future of the world. And then they pull down a massive towel or towel? No, why would someone be standing underneath a towel? A huge cloth, and then there's some sort of Aryan weird Adonis youth. It's just the way
well, you're being quite nice
well.
About him. You're saying he's a perfect physical specimen, and that's, you know.
Yeah, but
fair
he's
enough.
A perfect Nazi specimen. So, you
okay,
know, you
that's
know
not
that
quite so. Positive.
They're not quite. There's something slightly off with them.
But this scene is peculiar because obviously it's designed to make Amanda jealous. Amanda has fallen foul of him by, well, he found out she's engaged, and she's been trying to crack on to him for days and weeks now, omitting to tell him that she's engaged to somebody else. So he's sort of punishing her, presumably. By being a bit flirty with this woman who's come to learn how to windsurf. But frankly, I'm sorry, if I'm going
very
for windsurfing this, I don't want someone grabbing my arse.
No, exactly.
Thanks. So it's a bit 80s.
Yes,
yeah,
it was. Yeah.
Yeah,
he's literally got his arms around her, isn't he, at one point?
Yeah, properly. And then obviously Amanda, her jealousy peaked, kind of flounces off. And to show her frustration, she kind of gently slaps a surfboard.
That's right, yes.
Which she does not do with any conviction, and I wish they'd cut that because it did not work.
She gently throws a shark in through a window. Oh my God, she's vicious.
Would have been more dramatic, but yeah. Then we go to Jan, who's on the phone, and
yes.
She says a lot, very well, Mr. Leverett, very well, Mr. Leverett.
Mr. Leverett.
Yes, Mr. Leverett.
Mr. Leverett, that's such a Victoria Wood name.
It is,
Mr.
Isn't it?
Leverett.
Yeah. But you can't tell by the end of the phone call. They do this a lot in Howard's Way, the double bluff. Like, it sounds like the phone call's ended badly.
Yes, and then suddenly,
doesn't it?
We've got three boutiques.
Woohoo!
That's amazing. And she does the whole thing whilst being measured up
yes.
for her beautiful
so Anna,
evening gown by Anna.
Anna, her new fashion designer,
yes.
has made this really rather chic black thing with a kind of low V back. And obviously she wears it beautifully.
Yeah.
She looks incredible in clothes.
It's amazing because she has this conversation on the phone, which, as you're saying, is steering towards bad news whilst Anna's nervously measuring her clavicle.
She is.
And then she turns
it's important to get the clavicle just right.
We've got it. And here is the character that is always Jan's mummy.
Oh, lovely Dulcie Gray.
She's brilliant, but I think she's a bit of a... To me, she's like a cross between Mary Berry and like a raptor, but with a clutch bag full of Stanley knives and Merry Mints. She's got this real sort of like she could turn at the flick of a coin.
Yeah, I don't think she'd be upset with that description were she here today. Kate takes no prisoners. She's kind and she's maternal, but she's also very no-nonsense sometimes and
that's
can just...
Yeah, because we see more evidence of this later on at the races where she's sort of invited to join in. She goes, no.
Yeah, do you know what? She's lived through two wars. Like, she doesn't need your bullshit.
Yeah.
She's got her own stuff going on.
But not only did she live through two wars, she started two wars.
She probably did,
she was
pretty.
The one just somehow started it. She's a really good character because one minute she's very affectionate and very loving, and then she'll just say something really cutting and then wander off.
Later in this episode, she's really quite
passive-aggressive,
chilly, isn't she?
Yeah, it's nice.
So anyway, Kate tells Jan, while Jan gets changed behind a screen out of her evening dress so it can be finished for dinner that evening
yes.
with Sir Edward... Kate says she's worried about Leo. This Amanda situation doesn't appear to be
also,
going
too
well.
When she gets changed behind the screen, you can see the people in the office just behind. So from their point of view, if they're looking, they could just see Jan taking
her
clothes
off. They're getting a treat. Yes, exactly. It's bad set design there. Sack the designer. But yes, this is where Kate says, because obviously Jan's talking about just being busy with business and Leo can look after himself.
Mm.
And Kate, I think, wanting to bring her back to reality a bit, says, don't forget someday when you go back home, you'll find all the rooms are empty.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, talk about shove the knife in a little bit.
I know.
Just going, look at my success, Mum. Look at my success. Yeah, well, you enjoy it.
Mm.
I think at one point, Jan made a really good strawberry conserve that was better than her mum's at some Women's Institute thing.
That's
and
it.
And she's
That's
never
it.
Forgiven her daughter for being there. It's always in
There's
the back
secret.
Of her mind, like, how
yeah.
dare you usurp me?
One day I'm going to crush you.
Yeah, I'm going to crush you.
You won't know when, but I'm coming for you.
I'm going to tell you when constantly, but you won't know when. Oh, Mother, that makes it even worse. The veiled threat.
Do you want to talk about your mum, Paul? Is this where did you make jam? Is this what we're...
Mum used to make blackberry jam, yeah, the old traditional Devon way by sending my brother out to steal it from gardens and hedgerows, and also apples as well. And then
fabulous,
she would turn a stool upside down and take a new pair of tights. I must stress, stretched them over, and that's what she used to do to drain the jam. So
that's incredible.
You boil up all your fruits, and then you pour them in the outstretched tights.
Got you.
And then all the liquid will fall through eventually, leaving all the pulp. And then you've got this amazing pulp jam tight cudgel that you can fling around and hit people with, which you should never do because it causes endless mess.
Such sticky mess. What an oogie mess. Every day is a school day. Thank you for that jam lesson.
You're welcome.
Then we go to Charles Frere's house/office/business.
What is this
area.
All about? Who the hell are Praximo? Praximo.
Right. So business scenes, traditionally in this podcast, we just write down anything you caught because none of it really makes any sense. Holding percent overextended AFTC's situation, Grunwald. Gerald says a lot of stuff about that. And then turns out Charles discovers his dad has been talking some shit about his business part behind his back because his dad wants to ruin his business. They're enemies.
And Charles's desk, there's the Nazi eagle. Here's your second example. There's a weird sort of golden Nazi. It looks exactly like the Nazi emblem.
Now you come to mention it, it's all getting a little bit.
It's there. Hitter. And he looks like some weird sort of part-time milk tray man.
Yeah, he's gorgeous though, isn't he?
But wouldn't he turn up at your house and then sort of leave you milk tray, but also he'd leave you like a little bailiff's warning? You know, it's a double edge with him.
Yeah, I think you're right. But that's basically a good way of summing up his character. You're very good at this.
So is he the guy, Julia, that, because you just said he's gorgeous. Is he your go-to in Howard's Way? Charles?
I'd say perhaps as a more mature woman, I'm enjoying Charles more now.
Okay.
I think when I was little, when this was on, I thought Tom was just very nice and sort of reassuring. So I think I don't think I fancied Leo. I don't think I really fancied any of them. But if I had to fancy someone, it was the one who designed boats and wore lovely jumpers.
Yes.
That was my, he looked like a lovely weatherman. He's unthreatening. Anyway, Charles wants AFTC in the bag.
And what's AFTC?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Because at one point it's actually referred to as the AFC. Someone forgets to say T.
Oopsie.
It's in another scene later on.
It doesn't matter. They know people are tuning out for this business stuff. We want dresses, boats and sex. We don't really want the business stuff. It's just a way of keeping gaps between the other more exciting stuff. Then we go to Leisure Cruise, where Sir John is now explaining to Ken, obviously he already knows this, but we need to know this, that since the death of Mark in his cuckold speedboat accident suicide, Sarah, his wife, now becomes controlling a shareholder of Leisure Cruise. She owns 2/3. Ken now only owns 1/3. And obviously Sarah isn't talking to Ken because of like the dead husband problem.
My name's Jason Fleming. The More Than My Past podcast will see me talking to a wide range of inspiring people. People who have confronted and overcome addiction or imprisonment or both and turned their lives around.
I did mad things that was hurting myself and hurting other people.
Everybody grows up in a house called normal. Heroin addiction and chaos was my normal.
Some people don't understand the word moderation and I was definitely one of those people.
The More Than My Past podcast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Doesn't this sort of business stuff alter week by week? So at 1 week, one's got two-thirds control. The next week, the other one's got two-thirds control. The week after, the local dog's got two-thirds control.
Yeah.
It changes at quite a pace, doesn't it?
It does. And if you follow the paper trail, it all does kind of add up. But basically now, Sarah has got Ken over a barrel because she's, you know, obviously for most of this episode, keeps her cards close to her chest.
Right.
She's mostly just distraught at the loss of her husband who she was cheating on. And just feels very guilty. But no. Yes, Ken is in danger of losing a lot if she sells.
Now, I need to talk to you about Sir John.
Else. Oh, yeah.
Did you recognise the actor Sir John?
Oh, now, what's he been in? Because obviously he's been in everything.
He was the Nazi genetic scientist in A View to a Kill, James Bond.
I'm telling you,
there's a Nazi connection running through all of this. It's unbelievable. I looked at him
incredible.
And went, is that the mad scientist with Zorin in A View to a Kill? Looked up at IMDb. Yes, it is. It's the same actor, Willoughby Gray. Chap who plays Sir John is the Nazi scientist helping out Zorin in A View to a Kill.
What are the chances?
So
you've
this
uncovered
is madness.
Some kind of deep Nazi plot in a way that I just was not aware of.
I'd like to think that was your reason for doing this, Julia, in the first place.
It was a very slow drip over
5 series you're going to reveal.
Yeah, as if the right wing needed any help from me.
I was going to say.
No, but I have to say, watching this series, I have been feeling unaccountably more right wing as the series has gone on, and I haven't really been able to put my finger on why.
What clues are there? Leo Hitler Youth, Charles's Hitler memorabilia, and an actual Hitler scientist.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm going to try and be a more aware person now because I feel like this is having an influence on me.
Sorry about that.
Anyway, so John and Kenneth have this discussion about the shares in Leisure Cruise, and then he gets down to it, Sir John, and he says, I'm asking you to be candid, Kenneth. He wants to know, were you doing it with Sarah? Are you doing it with Sarah? And are you going to marry her?
On the cards. He also talks about guilt. And Sir John says, guilt in a woman's mind could prove very dangerous.
Like, they can't handle it. We're fine. But they, their little brains, oh, they cannot handle
very
it.
Very dangerous having to process guilt. Anything could happen.
They might start sewing or laughing or asking for chocolate. It's terrifying.
Madness.
So anyway, Sarah won't talk to Ken, that much is true, which puts a great deal of strain on Ken because he's not sure how. He knows he's going to have to manipulate her somehow, but how and will she be open to it? Like, suddenly that stuff isn't working anymore, what with her husband being dead and everything.
Yeah.
Then at the Howard's house, Leo arrives and Jan is stunning in her now finished black gown.
Yes.
And he's very angry that his mum is going out again with Sir Edward, like in a very Freudian way that I'm not comfortable with. Whenever she goes out with Sir Edward, he's just like, basically acts like a jealous boyfriend.
Is Sir Edward the first person that Jan has been seeing since splitting up with Tom, or is she, no, Ken?
Oh, no,
Ken,
before
obviously.
That she saw Ken, and then Ken paid to get Leo beaten up, so you'd think he'd be pleased at least she wasn't with Ken anymore. But apparently Sir Edward makes him very angry. And then he says something like, Jan is acting like a groupie. And Jan just sort of brushes him off and leaves. The chauffeur-driven Jaguar is outside to pick her up.
Don't wait up.
Quite
right,
too.
Don't wait up. She's off.
Mm. And as it turns out, don't wait up, like literally don't wait up. And then after she goes, Kate says to Leo, tell me, my dear, what is a groupie? I'm like, yes, let's hear the explanation for that. But we don't get to hear that. He just says, oh, never mind.
Again, I can imagine Leo going, well, Nana groupie as well. And then she'll just go, oh, yes, of course. Just like when I was on tour with, you know, and then suddenly launches.
Noel Coward.
Noel Coward.
Dulcie Gray used to hang out with Noel Coward. She's
really?
A hit songwriter.
Oh, wow.
She wrote a hit song and she used to hang with Noel. And Noel, there's an amazing quote about if you want a party, invite Dulcie Gray. So she knows what groupies are.
Nice.
She probably was the original groupie, quite frankly.
Oh my word.
Anyway, in a classy way, in a cool, classy, holding a martini kind of a way. Then we go to the unhappy Urquhart's house.
Yeah, what's going on here with Polly and him?
It's hard to put your finger on it. So, long story short, his long-term friend, who we think probably is his lover, is very, very ill and has not long left to live.
Right.
This is a man, by the way.
Okay.
So the person he really loves, not Polly, is slowly dying somewhere off camera. So that was weighing very heavily on his mind.
Right.
He didn't really talk about it. But he sort of opened up to Polly a little bit about it. Meanwhile, he's always under pressure from Charles, I suppose. He's being used as a kind of a mule in Charles's business dealings.
Yeah.
Thanklessly, mostly. He never gets thanked for it. And Polly is just generally preoccupied with the fact that her husband just isn't himself because he's under pressure and they don't really talk anymore. And just, you know, although it's a lavender marriage, everything in terms of their communication appears to have gone a bit up the swanny.
Right.
They're living separate lives, Paul.
Oh, in a big, dusty old manor.
They don't even say hello.
No. He comes in and she just stands there, doesn't she, staring at her porcelain.
Looking at the wall, yeah, exactly.
And then he sort of goes, I must say something. Oh, I won't.
Exactly.
And then,
we go to Highfield, where Sir Edward lives in his giant, empty, echoing mansion covered in expensive
artworks.
Yes,
and he's very much courting Jan here, isn't he?
Oh my God, and how. He's
wow.
Like keen
pulling
as mustard.
He even says that he's just as old as the cognac he's drinking.
Yes, I just wrote down flirty old cognac.
Yeah, flirty old cognac.
Because the cognac's old and so is he, but that's not going to stop him from, you know.
And technically, she's young enough to be his Horlicks.
Yes. She really is.
It's doomed from the start. This should never
be a pairing. And I love every scene in Howard's Way that always starts, that was a lovely meal. Never see the meals. We're not getting the prop food in. We're not getting catering. Like, just have coffee in the anteroom. You're not eating.
That
it's
was a
expensive.
Wonderful pot of noodles, Sir Charles.
I like to think that's what he served her.
Hot noodles, but on a silver tray.
Yeah. Thanks for giving me the last McNugget.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably didn't have those then, did they? Cripes. Anyway, they always have these strangely veiled conversations about family and business and work-life balance. And obviously that quote from Kate still ringing in her ears about coming home to find all the rooms empty. And then the image of the empty house is brought up again because she's admiring the house. He's saying, but it's empty. It's
yeah,
like, hey,
I know.
Trying to work out whether they want to live in each other's houses. You have to do a house swap or I don't know.
It's very rare in Howard's Way that you get people just sticking to one road of point. In other words, I'm here to woo you, you're here to woo me. Every conversation, whether it's about business or sex, intertwines with the other constantly.
Exactly.
They can never keep to one road.
Oh, it's like
road.
A dance, Paul. It's beautiful.
Oh, it's a beautiful dance, isn't it?
Yeah. I've been a little bit critical of the scripts up until this episode.
Oh, really?
But I quite like this one. It's written by Anthony. I'm going to flick to the end of my notes here. Anthony Osborne.
Oh, okay.
And this script is good because they, like, bless him for doing this in like an hour-long Sunday night drama. But he keeps on returning to the theme of the severance of family bonds and then the competition between families.
Yeah.
He tries to bring themes in. The image of the empty house. Like, he's really gone for some proper symbolism, a flavour.
Sort of insular looking inward moments throughout this episode, which a lot of people are sort of going, oh my God, I think I've regretted every decision I've ever made.
It's quite philosophical.
Anyway, it's
episode.
Lunch now.
Yeah,
and then they're off
let's
again.
Let's get pissed in a wine cellar.
Yeah.
Was it
the author's idea or was it the director or the producer's idea? Because every time Leo is either on screen, especially when he's on the phone, he has his own mini sax theme.
Leo or Ken?
Sorry, Ken. It's Ken. Sorry, Ken.
Get
so
the names right, because Ken does, I mean... It's been a trope since series one. I believe Carrie Quinlan, the first ever guest on this podcast...
Yes.
Who's just returned this series as well, actually, said that man is a walking saxophone. And I think never has a truer word been
every
said.
Every time he's on screen, he has a tiny little, his own personal little sax thing.
That's because he's tasty.
But isn't it to denote sleaze?
It's to denote that he's got one thing on his mind.
He's
he always
night,
has an agenda.
Sultry jazz club stroke.
He is.
Business meeting.
He's Chardet, warm white wine.
Chardonnay.
He's always ready to seduce.
But also seal the deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Seduce in business or seduce in the bedroom.
Because I reckon someone could do reverse cowgirl with him and he'd be having the time of his life, but he'd also be signing the document on her back.
You know what? Yes. Okay.
Horrible imagery, but I'm afraid that's just Ken.
No, you're right. You've got him down to a T. Anyway, he's sitting there with an open bottle of whiskey, tapping a number into his portable telephone.
Yes, brilliant.
And then he reaches once again Sarah's voicemail. Her voicemail is so over-enunciated. It's insane. insane. She finishes every word with every consonant really. It's just an odd.
I've been to finishing
one.
School. Yes, clearly. Clearly you have. Also, Ken's office is beautiful. It reminds me of my bedroom in the 80s.
We've had this conversation loads
absolutely
of times on this podcast
brilliant.
Because we all know someone. We either had it ourselves.
Ferrari red.
Exactly. Grey, red, black accents, yeah. Maybe a bit of black ash furniture, red chairs. It's just really, I mean, beautiful in some senses, but you wouldn't want to live in it now.
Oh my
like,
God, no.
Absolutely not. And I'm sitting here in a pink office covered in Nautique, but that's by the by. It's not red and black. That's just too much.
And does Ken use a tanning salon? I presume he does, because he's always tanned.
I mean, he's looking like maybe he's popped to the south of France or something.
Hasn't he just? I reckon he's in the tanning salon in between meetings.
I would not put it past him. Probably in like those tiny paper pants.
Oh, no, he'd be a Speedo kind of guy, wouldn't he?
Oh, no, probably, yeah. Speedo. Little budgie smugglers. Yeah, no, no.
But with his massive mobile phone just tucked in the band. Just in case he got that call from Stuttgart.
Yeah, he'd always be reachable.
Yeah.
So, sexy sax, Ken, Sarah, despaired, gloom, doom,
yeah.
despair.
So she blames herself, I presume.
Oh, yeah, she blames Ken and she blames herself. She's turning some of her anger outwards, obviously, as we see towards the end of the episode.
Right.
A lot of it inwards. So just the whole reminder of what they did and what happened to Mark. Is something she can't.
Because I wasn't
deal
still
with.
Sure at this point whether, now you've cleared it up, it was suicide. Because I just think, oh my God, are they complicit in something? Have they done.
I mean, as far as she's concerned.
Petrol with fairy liquid or something. I'm just like,
no, 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 no. It was entirely their fault, but it was Mark's very unique way of dealing with infidelity.
Right.
Suicide.
Yeah.
Okay, fine, cool. So we leave Sarah in despair. Then we go back to Sir Edward, who's looking up at the painting. Now, crucially, this painting, we see him looking at it a lot. It symbolises his competition with his son because he was a phone bidder at an auction. He knew that Charles wanted that painting. He didn't really want the painting, but he outbid him anyway because he hates his son.
Oh,
so
God.
They talk about the empty
That's
house
horrible.
Again.
Yeah,
how Highfield is full of artworks and, you know, gold. And
Jan's super impressed with it all. She's literally going, I can rearrange this room in about 2 minutes to my liking.
Honestly, it's like she might as well be getting a tape measure.
Yeah, definitely.
And then she's kind of, I can't really see what the, I mean, I can see that she's attracted to his wealth and status and power.
She's not really attracted to him though, is she?
It doesn't feel like she's never shown any signs of really fancying him, but she's kind of overwhelmed with the old flirty brandy and the painting, and she kisses him. She snogs him while she lets him kiss her.
Yeah, that's the weird. I was very uncomfortable with this scene because it really desperately looked like she wasn't remotely interested. And then she went, well, I suppose if I need to get my hands on all the tapestries, I need to put out a bit. And then she goes in for the clinch and it looks.
It doesn't look entirely
consensual
and lovely and comfortable. No, it doesn't.
It really
just seems a bit like she's going, oh, God, all right then. But there doesn't appear to be much of an attraction there. But he doesn't care. He's just like lovely fruit. Woman, yes, please.
And has he always had an eye for Jan?
Oh, from the day they met. They only met this series,
okay.
But yes, he definitely has.
Got you.
Then we go to a dark room. Emma is working late, developing pictures of boats. And she basically doesn't have anyone to act with in this scene. So she comes out of the dark room, goes to her desk, turns the lights on, looks at said picture.
Yes.
And says, my God, it's true.
Yeah, she's seen something that none of us have seen. And that thing
we don't know what.
Is torsional stress factors.
Thank you. This is why I got you on the podcast, because I know you're an expert in those.
Torsional stress factors.
If you just want to explain what those are, that'd be really helpful at this point.
Well, if you do yoga, you can get torsional stress factors if you don't warm up first.
Yes,
so
exactly.
You can salute to the sun just with too much effort and you'll get torsional stress factors running down your thighs and up your back.
It's very painful, actually, I've heard.
Agony. And then you have
and
to,
they take a long time to heal.
Yeah, you have to jump to the bottom of the ocean and just lay low for about an hour and then they will...
Because the salt water is good for them. Yeah.
Saline is extremely good for torsional stress
Thank
factors.
Heavens. Yes, see, I knew you'd know all about this. Then back at the Howard's house, it's the next morning.
Yes.
Jan has clearly not been home. Leo cannot contain his disgust.
Dirty little stop out.
He's fuming. And he's so angry. He's basically arguing with his dear, dear grandmother to the point where he sort of storms out and then she calls him back and says, Pax! I used to do that with my brother. We used to say Pax because we were pretentious children.
Has Leo realised that he has just no point in anything?
Oh,
that's why he's so angry all the time.
He's impotently angry.
Yeah, he is.
Men in Howard's Way are either completely like have enormous knobs or speedboats and or fast cars and huge
Leo's got none
portfolios.
Of them.
They're dickless.
Right.
And the last person who had no genitals was Mark Foster and he had to drive into a boy.
So Leo's the same then. He's little dickless.
He's just very impotent in every situation.
Aryan youth with a leaky canoe.
Yeah, he might look like the physical ideal, but he doesn't have any genitals. He's just all smooth like an action man.
He's like a Ken doll. Wow.
In terms of his agency, I mean, that's certainly true.
Yeah.
So as a peace offering, Kate says to Leo, why don't you come to the races with me? And he's like, all right then. But he's still furious about his mum having sex with someone.
How dare she have any semblance of a life?
Very, very odd. Then we go to Rolt Marine, where Avril is furious with Jack because he's come to ask for yet another handout to save the boatyard. And she's like, no, gave you £3,000 already.
Doesn't he accuses say, her... get him best.
Yeah. He also accuses her of swinging with the big knobs.
Swinging with the big knobs. Go with is it to go with Charles and just get him pissed and then you'll get...
Yeah, she's going to Charles's French chateau for the weekend to taste his wine.
Yes.
If you know what I mean. Mm. And yes, and Jack says, well, great, can you just get him pissed, then ask him for the money? And she's like, oh, all right then.
Hail you out again.
So that's all very unethical. Back at Fashion HQ, Anna's being hassled by her oppressive Chinese father over the phone. We think about an arranged marriage. Is that what it is?
I wasn't sure what it was. I wondered whether it was like, you should be a doctor like everyone else in our family. How dare you go into the frivolous world of fashion?
Well, actually, he runs a kind of sweatshop making low-end fashion for the market.
Does he maybe work for Praximo?
Oh, I don't think so.
No, oh, damn.
Possibly, maybe Primark.
I need to find more about Praximo.
Make that your homework. Yeah, no, he runs a clothing factory. And I think he only allowed her to go to fashion college so that on graduation she'd come and design clothes for him. And then obviously Jan spotted her potential and brought her into the world of high fashion where she belongs. But he's still trying to arrange a marriage for her. That's the Anna story. But it's just clearly a B-plot this episode. They're just making sure we remember that she's hassled and under lots of pressure.
Yes, yeah.
Jan swans in, obviously doing the walk of shame, but in an amazing new outfit. So she must have just popped home to get some more fashionable clothing.
Yeah.
This huge, like, batwing sweeping kind of jacket, skirt. Oh, she looks amazing. But probably still smelling of Sir Edward's cologne.
Oh,
only to meet who? But
claret and cognac.
I know. Yeah. Old cognac that's as old as him and certainly a lot older than her. And then she surprised to see Tom there, who slightly awkwardly asks her if she wants to buy some shares in the yard.
Yes.
A business she has no interest in at all.
And she sort of goes, yes. All right.
And that's where we'll have to leave my chat with Paul today, but do come back tomorrow for part two. See you then.
Welcome to All Rather Mysterious, the podcast that aims to unlock the mysteries of the past with the key of fact. My name is John Rain.
My name is Eleanor Morton.
My name is David Reed.
Please join us as we present to you mysteries that have baffled the world.
You add any noises?
What about a door creaking?
You don't have to do it.
That weird kadoonk that lights going off makes for some reason in films.
All Rather Mysterious.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.